Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Eddie and I were just talking about a bunch of stuff that I'm going to cut out, but it was brilliant, let me tell you. Yes. Anyway, welcome to the commentary track. I don't know what I'm going to call this commentary track because you, like so many people, did two completely different jobs on this project. So
you know, fight choreography and editing.
Fight choreography and
so
assistant
hand
editing.
In hand. They go, yeah. In film school, we...
Did you double major in film
school?
Yeah,
I remember coming to class and I used to sit down at the flatbed and somebody would put me in a wrist lock and I had to react. That's
wow, that's full contact editing, which is they don't teach anymore.
And I was in the army, so we used to like rappel into enemy territory, set up a photo cam,
slap out a music video,
slap out exactly, throw together a montage.
You know, if you can throw together a montage under fire,
that's they're the real heroes.
When you're this will be a mise en scène live fire exercise.
That'd be great if you infiltrated enemy lines and then cut together a montage of you doing that.
I think the Special Forces does that now with
yeah,
the helmet
exactly.
cams. Well, okay.
Crap.
Anyway, the guest for this commentary is Mr. Eddie Doty. Hello,
hi.
Eddie. So first of all, let's explain your contribution or your job. It's only a job if you get paid. Which
exactly.
So your contribution.
Contribution sounds much more egalitarian.
It does. Yeah. It sounds more noble. Your participation in Return of Pink 5 consisted of fight choreography, which was not just on set, but was much more extensive than mm-hmm. that. We'll talk about mm-hmm. that. And also, interestingly enough, as an assistant editor.
In, yes.
The whole Pink 5 project is sort of like a giant snowball that rolls downhill, mm-hmm. and people come to us and get caught on board and end up being part of the avalanche with us.
Yes.
And you're one of the ones in that case. When we went to Comic-Con for the Fan Film Awards in 2004,
yes.
when Pink 5 Strikes Back mm-hmm. was up for the award and we got audience choice, and we went on stage and we did our shtick, Amy and I did, afterwards... A fella came up and said, "Hey, Amy, haven't seen you in a while." And that fella was,
was
in fact
me.
You. Who, and then, yeah. So you were a friend of Amy's way back when.
And in high school. But we always kind of stay in touch. We always kind of email like a couple times a year. I go to Comic-Con every year because I'm a big nerd. And me and my friend Damien get there like late for Thursday night. We're like, "Hey, let's check out the schedule. Let's see what's on there." Fan Film Awards. We have got to go check out that crap. It is going to be just filled with acres of nerd. We have to check this out. It's going to be awesome. So we go and we sit down like in the far back where there's like three seats available because
it was
a packed house. And they start playing a lot of the other fan films and I won't go into great detail of my reaction
please,
of
please
many
don't.
Of them. Yeah,
I can imagine.
And then all of a sudden I see Amy Earhart up on screen with a surprisingly short haircut. So then afterwards I went up and I said hi to her and it took her about 2 seconds of just kind of stunned expression. And then we went out for drinks afterwards, all of us. That's where I met you.
Yes.
And that's what kind of snowballed into me sitting here today some 2.5 years later.
2.5 years later. So when we started pre-production, getting revved up to start making Return of Pink 5, Chris Hennell and I had written the script, and we knew that this was the movie where we had to pay off what had just been two movies of Amy talking, basically. If we're going to do some action, this is where we're going to have to do some. And there was something that we didn't have any tremendous experience in. None of the videos that we made were really action films. Amy is, a delightful girl, but certainly didn't have any martial arts skills that I was aware of. And yet we'd written this script where Stacy was supposed to be this great Jedi person. And we're kind of curious how we're going to pull that off. I think she had already started to work with you on stunt training before she ever even mentioned it to me. It wasn't my idea, certainly. I think she approached you first. And
well, what happened was we were at the LA Shorts Festival. And Chris Reed, the producer at the time, somewhere in the conversation, it came up that I have a couple black belts. I am a lethal weapon.
Yes.
No, I'm a blade of justice on feet. No, I've been in martial arts half my life, and I've done fight choreography in the past. And he just kind of wanted to pick my brain about what styles would be good and what places she could train at. And she said, I just kind of want to get into shape. Can you help me with that? And I said, sure. And that's kind of how it started.
I had a conversation with Chris Reed in this room early on when we were talking about the concept I had for what would become Stacy's costume. And I originally envisioned it basically as what you see, except that I kind of envisioned it with sleeves, with large
okay.
sleeves. And
yeah.
and Reed said, well, she's not going to want that. I think she's going to want bare arms. And I was like, yeah, but have you seen Amy's arms? She's got...
Ouch! She's got, burn, Amy! Burn!
She's got...
Face!
It's a conversation that you have with your producer, with the
of
actress
course,
not in
course.
The room. And hopefully she doesn't listen to commentaries either. And it's not, it's like Amy's, like I said, Amy's a beautiful girl, but not...
She is
not,
very very feminine.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
She's
a
delicate flower, before you got a hold of her.
It's, whoa there. Yeah. In high school, like, I was actually training for my first professional fight when I was 18. So I was like, I totally had Eye of the Tiger 24/7. Like, there was sometimes, like, she'd come over at lunch, like, hey, what's up? And I would just grab her and hip throw her and flip her head over heels. And one time I did it and she was in a dress. And she was so pissed.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, she was very pissed at that. So
girls are funny, man.
Girls are funny. Girls.
Yeah.
So,
but that was, of course, before you turned her into the engine of Muay Thai destruction.
Yes. Which was that is Amy Earhart.
I don't even know what those words mean, but as long as Amy was happy with it.
You don't even spell it in letters. You spell it in karate chops.
Exactly. So. You have to actually act it out.
Yeah.
Human vowels don't really do it justice. It's more of a visual phrase. Quite frankly. All right, so
Pink Five.
Indeed. Remember that movie we were talking about? So here's what we'll do. We'll start the movie, and your editing comes in on volume 2.
Exactly.
So we don't have anything to talk about editing-wise. So we'll just be talking about Amy's stunt work in volume 1, which I'll say right up front, was far more than I ever thought she would ever be able to achieve. So it's a great testament to both you and her that, you know, what she's able to do and what she will be doing in volume 2, which makes volume 1 look like peanuts. What we'll do now is we'll kick off the actual viewing of the film, and then we'll continue to talk until there's an actual stunt to talk about, which comes up about halfway through the movie.
So, totally.
Apologies if you've listened to other commentaries, you know how this works, but briefly, I will run it by you. You need to open up an online copy of Return of Pink 5 Volume 1. This is a Volume 1 commentary. Play it on Atom Films or on some other embedded player that you might find it on. You'll see probably an Atom Films commercial right at the start, and then after that, you'll see the blue Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away logo will fade in, and then it will fade out. At the point where it fades out, that's when we will start talking again, and we will be in sync within a few seconds, hopefully.
Reasonably so.
All right, so I'm going to tell you to pause the commentary, and then you'll set up your Atom Films player, and once you are seeing the yellow Pink 5 logo on the screen, you'll restart it, and we'll start talking about Return of Pink 5, Volume 1. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, pause. And here we are watching the movie. You should be seeing the Pink 5 logo. If not, you've done something terribly wrong, or we have. Now, it's going to be a little while before an actual stunt appears on screen. There was a stunt in an earlier scene, which is a deleted scene. While we're waiting for the stunt to come on screen, and we can start talking about that. Early on, we had a conversation that you have a whole rant about fake fighting in movies and people who really know how to fight versus people who just spend a day learning a couple of moves. And you were absolutely right, and it paid off tremendously. So you want to explain that?
Yeah, I call it the Drew Barrymore syndrome. And and I started off in Kung Fu. I have a second degree black sash in Jingmu, Southern Shaolin. So I appreciate how wonderful and flowery and pretty Kung Fu can be. But at the end of the day, if you're just doing arm gestures, and you don't know what it's like to be hit and hit hard and have to think under pressure, there's a certain way a fighter moves. There's a certain way that someone who knows what it is to fight carries themselves. And that translates. And even for an untrained audience that doesn't know the difference between a wrist lock and a wrist watch, it's an intangible. They can instantly tell. I think it was the Bourne Identity, the guy who directed it, whose name is escaping right now. He directed Swingers.
It wasn't Doug Liman, was it?
It was Doug Liman. If you look at what Matt Damon does in that movie, he does a pretty good eclectic mix of a lot of other stuff. But the majority of what he had Matt Damon train in was boxing, because his inspiration was the way a boxer walks to the ring, and he wanted Matt to have that walk. There's a certain reality that a fighter kind of knows. So when it came to training Amy, I didn't say, okay, let's practice quivering palm stance, or let's practice our foot gar or our Jing Mu postures. You know, it was, okay, you're going to throw on some gloves and you're going to hit me, and I'm going to hit you back. I'm going to hit you back hard and safely. I'm not going to knock any teeth out, but you're going to know what it's like to be hit, and you're going to have to react to that.
Some of which you see, and there's one of our behind the scenes that Matt put together. You see some of the training that you were doing.
That was the light stuff. I just want to qualify that. That was rather early on, but yeah, that was an idea of kind of the stuff we were focusing on.
Yeah. So and how often did you guys get together?
It started off once a week, and then I very quickly realized that we needed more than that, and it was at least 2, sometimes 4. But I gave her stuff to do when we weren't training together, like, you know, conditioning, some basic plyometrics and stretching that she should focus on to just keep her in shape. And I left gear at her house so she could practice at any particular time. We would start off with some stretching, and then we would warm up with some drills and some footwork drills, some hand speed drills. A lot of Thai boxing, just a lot of Thai boxing. Then we would practice our choreography and go over that. And just practicing the fighting, just practicing hitting and feeling resistance of the pads and having to block shots, that tends to put actors in like a better mindset when it comes to, okay, now I understand this is fighting. They attack those choreography scenes, you know, like it's a fight. They treat it like it's a fight. There's an intensity level there that normally isn't there. If it's just like, okay, let's and your sweats. Let's go and practice our kung fu. Yay!
which incidentally had a little indirect payoff with these early bikini scenes. I think, quite frankly, I think Amy was more nervous about these than she was about doing any fighting. So she turned out okay in both respects, fortunately. And I think she's, well, I don't know if she's happy about it or not, but she certainly should be. For me, it was like this was something that was happening sort of out of, I would come by every so often. I would kind of see what you guys were doing, but I was mostly involved in all the other pre-production stuff. I forget what day it was, but there was one day when you guys came to the set and just started doing some stuff, and I saw what Amy had become, and she reared back and like booted you in the head from a standstill, and I was like, okay, I think this is going to work out. So it's really a testament to both you and her to have done that, all that pre-production, because it really does pay off. And I absolutely do agree with you. I even did at the time, and the proof is definitely on the screen, that there is just a whole... The fact that Stacey has a different vibe to her in this movie is because Amy had a different vibe to her, because she had had this training that she'd never had before and had a whole sort of different way of carrying herself and moving and just reacting to things. When she was facing down with someone, even if whether she fought them or not in the movie, there was that vibe that she was ready to fight them.
Sure.
And that was, and she knew what she was going to do. When, if the guy swung, she had a move in mind and she was ready to go. That's exactly what we wanted for the character. So
a big part of it's just not being afraid of getting hit. A lot of people flinch, you know, a lot of people, you'd be surprised. I've seen it so many times, not just in fight choreography, but just in regular training. A lot of people, when they throw punches, they close their eyes. Like it's like they don't want to see it.
You see that when they shoot guns too. Some people will squint when they shoot a gun.
Totally. They squint when they shoot a gun, or like they look down at their feet. I'm like, dude, your feet aren't punching you right now. You know, you need it. It's all the subtleties from like posture to eye contact to the way their shoulders move, the way their chin moves, you know, just little things that don't seem like much. But when you add them all together, it helps paint a portrait of like who the character is.
So the now it's what now, the hell do we talk about?
Oh, we're into friggin' plot.
Yeah, I know. It's
air quotes on plot.
There you go. The action. You have to bear with us in volume one because there's a little plot to cover. But exactly. Volume two is there's a little action in volume two.
It's a rollicking adventure, says Joel Siegel. It's pink fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. Now I'm going to punch you very, very hard in the throat.
Yeah.
Oh, he must die.
Yeah.
Yeah. The action level overall, like you hope happens in most movies, the action level from volume one to volume two to volume three is definitely a progression going on.
Oh, absolutely.
And we didn't shoot entirely chronologically, but we shot mostly chronologically, actually.
For the most part, yeah.
And so it you know, as we got better and better at it, and you guys, you know, continued the training and worked in more and more skills for Amy to display, we just started putting more and more of them in the movie. To where we got to the point where we were shooting the big action finale for volume three, which we won't talk about.
I will say this, the majority of our choreography and training was focused on that so much to the point where it was just like, okay, well, we got this other stuff that we're filming tomorrow, whatever, we'll come up with it like later on.
You had a sort of a set of choreography moves. I mean, she knew how to do a kick this way, she knew how to do a kick that way, and you would just pull one out of the bag and go, okay, well, take out this guy from this direction and hit this guy the other way and give that guy an elbow. And
exactly.
And again, it's all about preparation. And I think, not that I want to denigrate other people's work, but I mean, I think the cliche of fan films of people in the backyard swinging broomsticks at each other.
Because that's fun.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, it's fun if you're that person.
If you're that person, yeah.
But
it's
not necessarily fun to watch if you're not that person.
Exactly. So
now we're coming up to the point where you're actually going to see just the tip of the iceberg of what Stacey has become in the film. And that's this little stormtrooper encounter. And in the armor is Chris Drake,
yes.
Who worked with you guys a lot. And
yes, he did.
Was her sparring partner quite often when you weren't around. And he also did something that was above and beyond the call because he's wearing his own armor.
Yes.
And we'll be talking a little bit later about stunt armor that we prepared versus people bringing in their own armor.
We learned our lesson on his armor, unfortunately.
Yes, we certainly did. And we thank Chris for his being our test case for that. I also remember the first time we actually started to work out with someone in armor, suddenly a lot of the blocks that you had in mind suddenly weren't working.
Completely
because
changed.
That forearm piece on that stormtrooper armor on a bare hand hurts like hell, apparently.
Well, it was actually the Boba Fett armor that we first discovered that on, because the Boba Fett armor actually has like spikes on it. Like there becomes a point, it's like, okay, well, you're gonna grab the wrist.
Right, here's, or we'll pause because the move is coming and beautiful.
And here I am talking about how awesome Thai boxing is and everything, and the very first move I ever do is straight from Bagua Zhang, a total Chinese internal soft style. It's one of the...
Even with all the rehearsal, it was really hard to make that move pay off because, of course, he was so much taller and bulkier and wearing armor, and it was really hard to make. And I will say that editorially, I also sped it up about 40%.
Of course.
Because they were really struggling to make that move pay off. So but if it works, it works. So that's great. Then there's the, of course, then we encountered Darth Vader and she's... and here I think you see the I hope you see the sense of she's not afraid, and if he wants to throw down, she will throw down right there with him.
Exactly.
Bring it on, old dude, is the vibe that we were going for, and it's there. So we're coming up to the lightsaber battle, which is certainly the action centerpiece such as there is of Volume 1. We have a behind-the-scenes documentary where we had a much smaller, simpler, just a quick exchange of hits originally planned and originally shot, mm-hmm. and I suddenly was struck by the fact that you guys had done your work so brilliantly that we could probably get away with a much better one and a much longer one.
Yes.
I know it may not seem like a very long saber battle to the viewer, but to us, it's three times as long as we originally intended it to be. Anything you want to talk about there?
I mean, well, I remember just originally supposed to be a quick exchange because it was thought of just as like an afterthought almost. Like it was just...
Yeah, it was meant to be just a brief... That the cross saber is just very briefly, and then it turned out to be something much
larger. And then... I remember that morning, we're like, we need more saber. And I'm like, give me an hour. And
the move that came in was the overhead spin, which was, it's become the signature move in where she does the backhand overhead, which is such a great shot. And you often see that as a still. It's become our new
it's
poster
like wallpaper.
Picture.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just, I just knew basically I'd seen in a few of even the original trilogy and even like the prequel trilogy, the idea of just blocking behind the back. You know, I know Obi-Wan did that in a couple of the prequels.
Yeah.
And I think Luke even does it once. I may be wrong. I'm sure somebody out there is correcting me as we speak.
Yes.
But I knew that, you know, just kind of keep a continuity with the rest of the Star Wars universe. And then I'm always a big fan of spinning back fists in Thai boxing.
Sure.
And I love it because like they come out of nowhere and when they hit, they look just totally awesome. And I've always wanted to do that with a sword. And
I think I may have mentioned at some point that in Last of the Mohicans, which has some great hand-to-hand combat,
yeah.
Daniel Day-Lewis has a backhand knife stab move that he pulls, and it's awesome that he uses it twice in the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
He does it exactly the same way, which in conventional thinking, you might think, well, that's kind of boring to do the same move, but it's realistic because if you have a move that works, you use it.
Die Hard with a Vengeance, there's a scene where Jeremy Irons is... female henchman has two daggers.
She does a little
and
dance.
She does nothing but do spinning backward stabs on this one guy, and the characters in the movie acknowledge how ridiculous it is. They're like, come on, cut it out. Like he's beyond dead.
Yeah, she's
but
playing
it just,
with
it looks so awesome. She feels compelled to do it.
And that's how it is in movies.
Yeah.
The original Pink Five, you know, started as just some, you know, a series of Star Wars jokes, which most many parody films do, but we wanted to push it to another level. So one of the many ways we tried to do that was to have, you know, when we did an action scene, we wanted to like, by golly, we're going to do an action scene. We're going to try and do as best we can with the resources we have. We're going to do an action scene. I can't envision what we would have done or how we would have done it if you hadn't contributed what you did.
Well, thank you, Trey.
Because Amy's a delightful actress, but she did not know how to take a punch until you started hitting her. So.
Yeah, well, that's the best way to do it. And I didn't throw her directly into the fire. We started off small, but you just work it up so gradually they don't even notice that they're, you know, being hit in the shoulder hard. We'll cover this more in Volume 2, but I have a permanent scar above my left eye from a stunt that was filmed for Volume 2. So I, at the end of the day, did not feel bad at all with being a little stiff with her when it came to some of the kicks and whatnot. So.
Well, all right then. So, yeah, we all bear the scars, as we've said. We all bear the scars.
Some physical, some emotional.
Mine are mostly on the inside. But that's how it is when you make a movie. I mean, it's not a good movie if you're not working hard at the very least. You know, it's like you can be having fun, but at the end of the day, it's always hard work to do it right.
Exactly.
So thank you very much, Mr. Doty.
Thank you.
And of course, we will continue right on in real time here and do the Volume 2 commentary. Where this going to be, we're going to have to talk a lot faster there because by golly, the action starts coming faster. Fast and furious.
A phantasmagoria of human on Ewok action.
Go, Joel Siegel, go.
Go, Joel Siegel, go.
It's pinktastic.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's from his journal. That's from his secret diary.
That's from his blog.
That's his fan fiction.
Really. Joel Siegel's.
How great would it be if Joel Siegel wrote fan fiction?
Wow. I don't know if great is the word I would use.
Family Ties fan fiction.
Okay. I can see that. Maybe one of our listeners will get to work on that. What if Joel Siegel wrote Family Ties fan fiction?
Stacy meets Nick and decides he's no good for Mallory.
All right, I want to see a first draft on my desk by tomorrow morning.
Yes, sir.
Ready, set, go. And until then, thank you very much, Mr. Doty.
Thank you. You are welcome, sir. Thank you.
And we will catch you next time. Thanks, everybody.